Live from WRCT Plaza. I screwed it up. I can't. Let me do that again. Live from WRCT Plaza in Pittsburgh, this is Sex Talk, delivering five nines of Sex Talk reliability from our sexological center in the heart of Oakland.
In the sex bunker.
I know that thousands of Pittsburghers all over the city are hunkering down due to the blizzard of 2001, hoarding milk and bread and putting
automatic weapons,
putting orange cones in front of your house. I want you to know that for
polishing the chairs. Yeah.
For the next hour, we're going to be here for you, come what may. Tonight we have a very, very, very special guest.
Only three berries? I think she'd deserve four at least.
I think five.
Five berries.
Tonight we have a very, 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 very special guest, but I won't even say who it is. Let me just tantalize you with this clue. She's the University of Pittsburgh's only lesbian anthropologist.
Does that mean anthropologist of lesbians?
We'll just have to stay tuned and find out.
Ooh, I'm enticed.
But first, I would like to read this public service announcement about Eclipse. Eclipse, that's Eclipse with a K, a new under 25 dance club experience, will have its premiere party on Saturday, March 10th. Is it March 10th yet? No.
No.
March 10th.
It's not Saturday.
Saturday, March 10th at Level. Level is at 333 4th Avenue in downtown Pittsburgh from 8 p.m. to midnight. The event is being sponsored by the Youth Collaborative, which is a joint project of the Gay and Lesbian Community Center of Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force, and the Youth Empowerment Project, which itself is a special outreach program of the Pitt Men's Study at the University of Pittsburgh.
There's so much nesting of organization
there. Yeah,
you know,
the person that wrote this needs to get a little whooping.
I think we need an org chart.
Yeah, sounds like fun.
Eclipse will be a drug and alcohol-free event. So, you know, my strategy would be to get liquored up beforehand.
Absolutely.
And then go. But no, it's going to be a fabulous
time. My love is a drug. Does that mean I wouldn't be allowed?
A fabulous time for the under 25 set, although I, DJ Eclipse, have been given special dispensation to go to this event. Admission to Eclipse will be $3 and transgendered teens, young adults, and their friends. I got some kind of brain virus today. For more information, call Lindsay Sickler. Kind of a funny name, but she's a very nice woman, I understand. Lindsay Sickler at 412-383-2940. Eclipse.
There you go.
Saturday, March 10th. Level, 333 4th Avenue. 8 o'clock.
If you're there, you can meet, in fact, in the flesh. Fabulous. DJ, what's your name for tonight?
DJ Run On Empty.
I was going to suggest DJ C. Co. in honor of Jennifer Lopez's new album. Because, you know, she's...
Seed Coat?
The name of her new album is J-Lo. So I was thinking
oh, really?
C. Co.
Oh,
right?
Not... Oh, yeah. Jennifer Love Hewitt? Who?
Jennifer Lopez. And Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I'm delirious tonight. Just go
J-Lo
easy on me.
J-Lo. Although, I don't know. Maybe Jennifer Love Hewitt has a nice singing voice. I have no idea. She does have the lungs for it.
I think she was singing for it.
I just saw you're not speaking into the microphone, and he's chastising you for that. Really? Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
She did a song before or after Coming Out of the Air.
Coming out of Party of Five?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow. You know, that sunk like a rock. I didn't even know about it. Not that I'm a big collector of Jennifer Love Hewitt trivia, but...
I have two comments to make about Jennifer Love Hewitt. First, I saw on the internet tonight that somebody claimed that... This is off of Meme Pool. You've probably seen it. The way to make fat attractive is to add a nipple, right? Any bag of fat that has a nipple is attractive. So this doctor was suggesting putting nipples on saggy buttocks or
I'm thinking that wouldn't really work for
waistlines or the average American would end up like covered from head to toe in nipples, which might not be a bad thing, right? Just like wrap yourself in some nice
The Hapti group to come back from 2 weeks ago. And
maybe instead of a suit of 1,000 penises, we're just going to have a suit of 1,000 nipples.
But back to Piper. See, when I thought...
By the way, that's her name. We didn't really introduce her.
Did you just say Piper?
I thought you just said lesbian anthropologist.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well...
You're tantalizing
I'm tantalizing her.
That's her last name.
You know, when I heard...
Mom's name was lesbian, dad's name was anthropologist, and they hyphenated it when they got married.
When I heard that we were having a lesbian anthropologist on the show, I thought, oh, no. Oh, Lord. You know, another Birkenstocks wearing... Angry man-hating freak. But I'm telling you,
you just got a freak instead.
We welcome freaks.
The sexual tension is high in this room. I'm feeling it. You know, the first thing Piper said to me was that I dress like a homeless person. That is already
I didn't say homeless people weren't a turn-on for me.
Right, yeah,
that's interesting. So already there's a kind of Moonlighting-style comedic tension going on. If we don't end up, you know, in some kind of bizarre three-way by the end of the show,
I'll be disappointed.
I'm turning the wild turkey back.
But, you know, like every kind of romantic comedy begins where the couple has to meet cute, right? They have to meet in some way that they hate each other.
Oh.
Like she's his new boss, and they clash immediately in the office. But then they bump into each other at the grocery store.
So we need a power dynamic. Am I on top or you?
I think you are definitely on top.
But you've already had like the little clash where she calls you a homeless man.
You
call her a hairy man-hating lesbian. Comedy is good.
Which I'm not hairy, by
the way. Pure comedy gold, I'm telling you.
No, you're not. You're probably the most attractive person I've seen this in the last 2 months.
Wow.
My feelings are hurt.
Well, ever since Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve. I mean, Dick Clark is still...
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Still holding a torch for
Dick Clark. His robotic chassis is pretty hot stuff. But the show isn't about Dick Clark and his hellish alien-inspired longevity experiments.
We can switch this topic. We can talk about that if you'd like.
No. I think we have much more interesting things to talk about. And time's a-wasting.
Does this look like a nipple? You guys can...
Yes, it does. It does look breast-like.
Is that good?
Oh, yeah.
So they say, right, that the... I'm going to treasure this forever. So they say, you know, that the shape of the champagne glass, well, apocryphically, it's shaped that way and has that volume because it was...
What's the word you just used? Apocryphically?
Apocryphically, which basically
means...
That's
not a word that normal people know.
I'm not normal.
What about, like, graduate students who have been in the program for, like, 10 years?
See?
In front of me? See, what's
the... See, I filled her in on all the dirt on both of us. I told her about my huge wealth and fame and how I'm loved by millions overseas. And I mentioned you and your scabby little rashes.
And the same one that David Hasselhoff, I guess, is or was big in Germany.
Oh, he's still big in Germany.
Really?
Indonesia as well, too.
Really?
Mm.
Actually, it's no joke. He's really huge in Germany. A friend of mine's girlfriend recently moved here from Germany, and she kept telling me about it.
Well, 10 years ago, it was true that David Hasselhoff was big in Germany. But I mean, Nobody's big continuously. Has he been for 20 years in Germany?
Actually, I read an article about him recently, about him on tour here in America. And he's just, like, a great showman, and he loves doing his stuff and people like that.
In Indonesia, like all the everything they get about Americans is either from Baywatch or Dallas. So they really think they were sexaholics. So
yeah, it's funny. When I was in Europe a few years ago, this was a few years after the Gulf War, and like this anti-Americanism was still riding high. And
as opposed to now,
right when the French love us. But if I tell people I was American, of course they'd start punching me and hurting me. But I would just say, oh, I'm from California. And they go, oh, Beverly Hills 90210, we love California. Of course, I'm not. And I was lying to them. But.
And you wonder why they hate Americans?
But at least they would stop throwing rocks at me long enough for me to get out of the room.
What was that accent? That was French?
I don't know. I think that was more of a Basque separatist accent. But we're leading astray. So, Piper, you're an anthropologist.
I am.
And you were telling me earlier that you're studying the seemingly dry, but actually in reality a very rich and fluffy and moist topic of cultural constructions of AIDS in Indonesia.
Correct.
Which means you get to work with prostitutes in Indonesia.
Sex workers.
Sex workers, sorry. So wait, is there actually a difference? Or are you just using a...
It's a politically correct term.
A better, okay. So is it okay if I call them whores?
Oh, yeah, they love that.
Well, can't they be reclaiming it, right? Like queer nations?
Yeah, like dykes.
Whore nation, exactly, mm-hmm. Like dykes. Like nerds?
I would skanky whore nation. I mean, is skanky whore considered offensive?
No, only in America. But in Indonesia, they don't mind as much.
Skank is a highly valued commodity in Indonesia. In fact, traded on their stock market.
If they had one, yeah.
But we digress. So you got your kind of start, or you started working with sex workers first here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I became interested in Indonesia first and then became interested in AIDS because there was a dearth of information on AIDS in Indonesia, but I realized I didn't really know anything about AIDS, so I started working with the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force. And so then we started doing outreach to sex workers in downtown Pittsburgh, and we were doing evaluations to see what kind of programs they would be interested in.
Are there many sex workers in Pittsburgh?
A good number, yes.
I've only seen two prostitutes down in the strip area. Well, right. Seen. So I just didn't know, like, maybe there's a half dozen. There could be hundreds. I have no idea.
There are quite a few, actually. And I think interesting also is a lot of male prostitutes in Pittsburgh downtown.
When you say quite a few, dozens, thousands, hundreds?
Well, yeah, I didn't meet them all.
There's probably new ones all the time.
Attractive?
Another interesting thing, you know, typically, like, if you talk about male sex workers in other places, you sort of get this vision of, like, this svelte little gay boy, you know, with his shirt halfway up, like, leaning against the wall. Here, they're, like, big, burly gang members who, like, start doing prostitution, like, as part of, like, getting into the gang because they need to have a certain amount of money to get into the gang kind of thing. And they get hooked on it, or they get hooked on the drugs that, you know, also comes along with it. And so some of the men, like, I was, like, handing condoms out to was, like, oh, my goodness. Like, who uses you?
Are these
so scary.
Are these active or passive prostitutes, or does it not make any difference, right? Like, do they specialize? I've always wondered this about male prostitutes, actually.
Typically, male prostitutes are passive, but they can be either, and it completely depends on their job, their client, what they want.
So there's a kind of gang that, like, whose initiation ritual is to, like, have their members have a bunch of gay sex.
I mean, why do you want to be in that gang?
Yeah,
or at least be on the admissions committee.
I want to be the ringleader.
Typically, you have to have a certain amount of money to get into gangs a lot of times. Like, one of the things they can do is, like, to jump into the gang is you have to have some money. And this is one way of getting it.
But you'd think the gang would not approve of that kind of...
That's why I was saying it was interesting.
Mandy-pamby.
In any other big city or middle-class, middle-sized city, it would be a completely different dynamic. But Pittsburgh is always different.
Some grapefruit.
Wow, that's really odd.
That's very sexual looking. Grapefruit there.
I don't know what kind of sex you have.
Kind with women.
I've seen some female genitals in my time, and they've never quite looked like grapefruit halves.
Really?
Maybe I'm just meeting the wrong
Maybe
girls.
Maybe it's the color and the juiciness. And
I think you've just got sex on your mind, lady.
Imagine that. Am I on a sex talk show? So anyway, working with sex workers in Pittsburgh, one of the things was we were evaluating what kind of programs they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And things that came up repeatedly were that they wanted clean needle exchanges because they typically were junkies either shooting up in order to sort of be out of their body when they're having sex, so forget about it, or they were, you know, having sex in order to get money so they could shoot up. Another thing they wanted was...
So men and women, or was this largely women who were...
In Pittsburgh, like, typically a huge portion of the sex worker culture is surrounding drugs. Men and women. And the other thing they wanted was a clean place to shower in between johns, because a lot of them were homeless and stuff like that. And so, which is interesting because I got all of my information on sex workers and AIDS and everything from my work with the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force and with, you know, the prostitutes and sex workers downtown. And so when I went to Indonesia, like, I could use none of it.
How so?
Well, in Indonesia, the sex workers I work
with... So, well, I guess we should give some background. So how long ago were you working with... No. It's my own sloppy presentation here. How long ago were you working with the sex workers here in Pittsburgh?
About a year ago. Like last semester. 2 semesters ago now.
And then you went to Indonesia
for
that
the summer.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is all very recent.
Yes, very recent. So when I went to Indonesia, like I was in the island of Java. You know, there's like 17,000 islands in Indonesia. 6,000 are inhabited. The island of Java is the second largest but has 80% of the population on it. So I was on the island of Java in the city of Yogyakarta in the area called Sosowijayan. And that area, like, was...
Is there going to be a quiz on this later?
There will be. 330 different ethnic groups, 707 different languages. All right. The largest Muslim country in the world. All of this very important to know.
Yes. We'll be getting back to the Muslim stuff later, right?
Yes. So I worked in an area, Sosowijayan, 5-block area with over 300 sex workers in it. They were sex workers that worked out of what they called guest houses.
Was this kind of the only, I guess if I can use this term, the only red light district in this city, or were there others? This is just one you happened to work in.
There used to be others. They stopped paying the cops the appropriate amount of money, and so they got swept out. And so the area I worked in was bulging out of its seams because everyone was moving into my area.
So it was kind of, that was kind of the...
It was, yeah, definitely.
Sex center.
Yes. But the thing was, the reason it was different from Pittsburgh was because none of the women I worked with were homeless and none of them were junkies. Like, there's no drug culture with sex workers in Indonesia, at least the ones I worked with. And I worked with all sorts of demographics. You know, ever since sort of the economic crash in Asia, like, a lot of people were forced into a prostitution that typically wouldn't have been in it. So I worked with anyone from... Like, the youngest woman I worked in was 17 to age 50. Some of them had, you know, college degrees. Some of them were putting their kids through college. You know, a lot of them had run their own businesses and things like this, and this is what they were forced into.
Is there much male prostitution in Indonesia?
There is some. I didn't work with any. And a lot of the male prostitution is focused around Bali. It's a much bigger gay mecca in Indonesia. there's not a lot. And also on Bali is straight male prostitutes. A lot of Japanese tourists, female tourists, go to Bali for sex exploits.
I've always wondered about that, you know, like kind of active male prostitution, because it seemed like the requirements of the job would be stiff, as it were. Like it'd be really, you know, it would be difficult to get an erection if you're not actually sexually interested in the person.
But is that true? Because I mean, A, I'm not a man, but B, like, what about like sex, like strippers? Like strippers, every time they go off on stage, they're hard. Like,
they are?
Strippers in Canada that
are
fully
nude strippers.
Are always hard.
I've never seen female strippers either, for that matter.
Well, I've been to like straight and gay male and female strip joints. And the best strip joint, there's a strip joint, Danny's in Canada, that we used to go, like I'm from Michigan, so we went to Canada for every bachelorette party. Oh. So, since all my friends are straight, but, so we would go there and the best male stripper I saw there, like, had this, like, it was, all the lights were turned off, and there was, like, a little camping shower with, like, a baby pool underneath, and then he had glow-in-the-dark soap that he would squeeze all over his body. Like, that was pretty good, just for, like, the artistic value of it.
That was pretty clever, yeah.
But hard. Like, most of them wear cock rings and stuff to stay hard. I don't know the logistics.
So I'm wondering, we're wondering whether you should have said penis ring there, and I'm also wondering, was this what I understand is that in the post-Viagra days, a lot of strippers use Viagra, and it's changed the whole technology of the industry. Was this then or was this now? Because the other...
It was pre-Viagra days.
Okay. Yeah, I think post-Viagra, it's all different, right? Like, porn actors don't have to be able to get it up on demand anymore. They can just pop that little blue baby. And same thing with, like, I think the sex workers in Bali. Anyway, but we're straying from...
So the question that occurred to me, why don't these Indonesians have the same kind of connection between prostitution and drugs, which seems to be endemic here in the States?
I think a lot of it has to do with sort of the circumstances in which they began prostituting.
Right,
like a lot of them can't afford to have – drug culture isn't the same there, especially drugs are only becoming really big in really big cities in Indonesia. Most of the smaller cities in the rural areas aren't having such a drug problem. And even within that, like, most of the women I worked with came from the rural areas, and they came into the city to have money to send back to their families. So all of their money is, like, they're very family-oriented, and so it was all being sent out. So they didn't have any money to sort of have drugs, even if they were into that sort of scene.
So you were saying, sorry, so the situation sounds really different. You said they all had houses, right? They were all associated with, like, were these basically brothels? Did they also meet their customers there, or did they normally do out calls or go to hotels? Or
yeah, they were called guest houses, and they were all in this one area, and they all had house mothers that they had to pay in order to stay there. And then they also had – there were guards in the area that would bring them clients and that they had to pay in order for them to keep the police out.
So the women themselves didn't, like, hang out in bars or street corners or whatever to meet men?
Some women do. Like, there are street – sex workers in Indonesia. I didn't work with those. I worked with the guest house based ones. And
so they didn't even really have a choice of who they were joining up with, right? They were
typically it's who they're brought in, but a lot of times they get their clients like on recommendations from their clients, sort of thing. Like, it's a different sort of culture in which they're not like hanging out at a bar and bringing four different men home every night. It's like every Thursday they have these three guys, and they have sort of like repeat customers all the time. And I think that stems more from, like, the sort of idea that multiple wives in Islamic culture.
So you'd mentioned this earlier, that prostitution isn't as stigmatized.
It's not as much so,
or differently
stigmatized,
I guess one could say.
Right, because of the sort of idea that you can have multiple wives. And the other thing is, like, most Indonesians would say there isn't any prostitution in Indonesia. And if you sort of force the issue saying, well, you know, that's funny because I work with 300 of them, then they would say, oh, well, those, we just have those for the Westerners. Like, they just think tourists come, use their prostitutes, and leave, and that's why they have prostitution.
But that's not the case.
It's not the case from the sex workers I talked to. You know, we sort of, like, we'd have these empowerment seminars, and we would list some of their clients, like all of their clients, and it would be anybody from, like, the peasant farmer to the corrupt businessman to the high-up politician, and they gave me this whole long list, you know, and when they were done, they were, like, all Indonesians they had listed, and so I sort of questioned them, like, so, you know, you don't have any orang putih, like, white people or foreigners, and they're like, oh, right, occasionally we get those, but not so much. Like, it was sort of like an afterthought, and only once I brought it up. Where everyone else just assumes, like, it's all foreigners. And there's another thing, like, why they don't feel condoms are very important, because they don't think they have a risk for AIDS because they see AIDS as a white person's disease. And as long as they don't have sex with white people, they can't get AIDS. And they also see AIDS as a heterosexual disease. And they
really?
See it, yeah. They don't believe homosexuals can get AIDS. As a matter of fact, a lot of, like, I not only worked with sex workers, I also worked with college students on sort of their perceptions mm-hmm. of AIDS. And some of the college students I talked to said that they engaged in homosexual sex in order not to get AIDS.
And DJ Seco is smiling. I smell field trip.
And then the other idea is the fact that it's a rich disease and poor people can't get it. Which huh. pretty much excludes all Indonesians because they're all poor.
That's basically the absolute opposite of every stereotype here in the U.S.
Right. We believe it's a homosexual disease, typically a black disease, and typically a poor person's disease.
Right.
So it's very sort of different. And that's what I said, like most – all the – everything I knew about AIDS in Pittsburgh, I could not transfer to Indonesia, which, you know, obviously – it's typical anthropology is about is how you can't transfer those generalizations around.
Right. So what you mentioned that sex workers here in Pittsburgh wanted basically like a clean, well-lit space, right? They wanted clean needles. They wanted showers. Mm-hmm. What did the Indonesian prostitutes want? Because did you present the same kind of blue sky wish list to them too? Did you?
I did actually. One of the things we did there was I needed to do a program evaluation for their programs as well, and sort of being a Westerner, I didn't want to like impose my Western values and my Western ideas of what they might need. And so what I did was I gave them all disposable cameras, and I had them go out in their community and take pictures of things they really liked in their community and things they thought needed improvement in their community. And
oh, that's a great, interesting idea.
Go ahead.
Sorry, have you used that elsewhere? Is that a common like anthropology thing?
It's not common. I got it from, like, reading one sort of article about it. Carol McAllister, who works at the public health, did it with, mm-hmm. What is it called? Not kindergarten, but before kindergarten.
Preschool?
Yeah. Head Start.
Oh, okay.
Doing Head Start programs and going in and finding out what people for Head Start programs needed. So she had done it in that sort of regard, and I just sort of transferred it onto sex workers.
From the preschool to sex workers.
It's not a far jump.
Your tax dollars at work.
So, but it was very interesting because a lot of things that I wouldn't have assumed, that came up. Like, they took a picture of an empty street, and they said, "This is bad." And I would be like, "Okay, so, it's quiet, it's nice, it's sunny. Why is this bad?" And they're like, "Well, because an empty street means no clients. And no clients mean we have more time. And if we have more time, we're going to drink and we're going to play poker. And drinking and playing poker are sins. So we don't want to drink or play poker. We need clients, so we don't do that." And so that was something I wouldn't have thought of.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that either.
And so a lot of these sorts of things came up. And so what they pretty much wanted was more education, not only for them, but also for the general public, because there's so many stigmatizations on using condoms and safe sex and all of this. Like if a prostitute says, "I want to use a condom," their client will cut off the transaction right there and then because they're assuming that means they have a disease. And so there are all these stigmas. And because condoms were illegal in Indonesia up until around 5 years ago. You couldn't get them anywhere, and even if you could, like, they were illegal, and then if you could get them, you could only get them from a doctor through a prescription, and then only if you were married, because the idea was only married people have sex.
Well, of course.
So, but now they're legal, they have a new government, the military regime is gone, all this stuff, you can get them. As a matter of fact, you can get them anywhere. They're in hanging in food stalls, and they're in pharmacies, and they're in grocery stores, and people are selling them on the side of the road, and they're everywhere. And I was really impressed with how available they are. But yet, still working with the college students I worked with, a lot of them were sexually active, and I would talk about condoms, and they were like, "Yeah, we understand condoms are out there. We understand that's good for safe sex." And I'm like, "So have you ever used a condom?" And like, "No, not me. Like, I don't do that." And none of the college students I worked with, which was a good amount, had ever used a condom, and almost none of them had ever seen a condom.
And that was just because the only people who use condoms are infected people, therefore.
Right.
Right.
And the idea that it was illegal for so long, so it's not like they don't have a condom culture like we do in America.
Interesting. So what kind of birth control is prevalent over there?
The pill.
Mm-hmm.
Indonesia has one of the best family planning programs in the world. Like, it's been very effective. It took, children per woman from 7 down to 3 in, like, one generation.
Wow.
And it's very effective. When you have a military regime, you can do things like that. But the thing is, like, and it's completely integrated into their school systems. At a very early age, they're taught about birth control and all these things, like in elementary school, and sort of given options. All the options are female-oriented. And when I asked about that, like, why aren't they teaching about condoms or male-oriented sort of birth control measures, you know, they said, well, everyone knows you can train a woman, you can't train a man. And that was, like, the general perception. And so birth control pills is a real big thing, and also Norplants. The government will pay to put a Norplant in. The government wouldn't pay to get a Norplant out, so many women are sort of running around with deteriorating Norplants in their arms because you're supposed to get them out after 5 years where they start going into your body and affecting you.
But, ew.
So a lot of people knew about those sorts of things. Condoms, not so much.
Huh. Do they have any other, like, venereal disease problems because of this? I mean, was there a lot of gonorrhea? Was there much herpes running around? Or?
There is, and they're finding more and more so. The problem was they weren't testing for anything for a while, especially not AIDS. Like, under the last military regime, they said we don't have any AIDS, so they didn't teach their doctors how to diagnose AIDS,
right,
or they never checked for it or anything. And so they went from, like, not having a problem at all until, like, just last year, the Minister of Health said, ooh, we might have an epidemic, but we're not sure. And so even with the fourth largest population in the world, they only have 1,000 cases of AIDS diagnosed, where the World Health Organization estimates about 500,000 cases of HIV. So, you know, it's a big discrepancy. But a lot of things, you know, STDs are, or what they call PMS, are more likely are diagnosed a little bit more. And actually that's how they're starting to diagnose AIDS cases if people come in with other STDs and they also look for AIDS. But they're starting to just train their doctors now on how to diagnose AIDS and stuff instead of diagnosing the opportunistic infections.
I just wanted to mention to our listener that if you have a if you have a question for Piper.
Erica, are you out there?
Erica?
You're our listener for this week.
Who's Erica? Is Erica also a hot lesbian babe?
She is very hot.
I'm liking that. Erica, our personal station phone number is 621-WRCT. That's 621-9728. Please call in with your
questions, comments, or concerns for Piper, the anthropologist.
Who happens
to be a lesbian.
And sexpert.
Who happens to be a lesbian. So I'm a very detail-oriented person, and I'm always interested in, like, the mechanics of how people do stuff and what goes on. So I'm curious. So there you are in Indonesia.
You can't ask her how lesbians have sex. We've been over this. It's very insulting.
I can get you a book.
Well, you got me those videotapes, but I can only get about 5 minutes into them before I get this funny feeling down in my swimsuit area. No. Basically, I'm curious. Like, so you're an anthropologist. You get off the plane. Like, you have a hotel room. You live in an apartment there. And how do you, like, meet with the sex workers? Like, do you hang out in the guest houses? Like,
how
you guys
did I gain
go to
access into the community?
Well, that, and also, like, on a day-to-day basis, did you meet people in restaurants? How did you not, like, you know, screw up their deals? Or, you know, did they ever consider you invasive?
Hey, me, can I watch? Can I watch?
Right, exactly. Did they ever consider you invasive? I'm just curious about, like.
I worked with an AIDS organization who was already there, who had a safe house for sex workers in the Social Gian area. So, like, it was in the middle of where they already were.
A safe house? How do you mean?
It had a medical clinic, and it had a prayer room, and it had people they could come and talk to, and if they needed a place to stay or whatever, they could, like, sort of crash there, and it had a kitchen. But it was very, like, it sounds very glamorous, but it was, like, one room and with a gynecological chair where they had a doctor twice a week. So the women could come and get checked out, and it was like, you know, mold growing on all the walls and little geckos running around. And so that's typically where I hung out.
Kind of like my apartment.
Yeah. Very similar to that. Oh, wait. I haven't been there yet. So.
At least you don't remember it.
Oh, I think I would remember.
So you met them there?
Yes. So
initially or all the time?
Like, well, The organization I worked with called Gria Lantera, I had emailed them from the States saying that I'm looking for a volunteer opportunity to work with AIDS. I didn't really care if it was sex workers or not, but because I had worked with sex workers in Pittsburgh, they sort of, like, hung on to that and said, ooh, come and evaluate our programs. So that's how I got into their organization. And then with that organization, I would sort of, like, hang out there, you know, all day, every day. And they had sort of different groups. They would have prayer meetings, or they would have aerobics, or they would have these sorts of things. And I would just be hanging out there, and I would talk to the women when they came. And then
did you say aerobics?
Yeah.
sex worker aerobics?
Yeah.
That sounds kind of hot, actually.
Well, they need to stay fit.
Maybe.
It helps.
Well, one never knows, right? Like, different cultures have different constructions of beauty.
Is this like naked sex worker aerobics? Was there like, did some guy get to like tell them what to do? I mean,
where are you going with this?
I think we're delving into his own little fevered fantasy life here.
Well, that was the thing.
It's the Percodan talking, isn't it?
The organization I worked with did a lot of, like, was very into what the sex workers needed. And so whatever the sex workers said was their thing, that's what they sort of made their programs into. So aerobics was something the sex workers wanted, as was the prayer meetings, something the sex workers wanted. The problem was that the organization I worked with is looking at losing its funding because it was too nice to sex workers. Rather than just giving out AIDS information, it was sort of making a little community.
Well, yeah, one could make the argument from a liberal point of view, too, that what they're doing is enabling this destructive lifestyle, if I can use that word, right? Like,
well, you could say that, or you could say you're empowering the women to see more in themselves so they can get out of this destructive lifestyle.
Okay. I was just kind of trying to blue sky a critique
right,
from the other
right.
side.
Play the devil's advocate.
Exactly.
So not only would I hang out there and talk to women, but they also, like, sort of, they had women who typically came to the place anyway, they asked them to come for this evaluation program, this sex empowerment program, in which I gave them the cameras and stuff, and they were really excited about using the cameras. And so I met with them, like, different times, talking about the cameras and talking about AIDS and condoms and all of this stuff. But really the one-on-ones is when I got the most information about demographics and things. And I found that, like, gaining access was much easier. Like, they wanted to talk anyway. They were really excited to meet a Westerner. A lot of them, you know, have met Westerners before, but they're sort of, like, we're still, like, up on a pedestal. And so a lot of them would take their pictures with me, and they would say that they're going to go and tell their clients that I'm their host mother because they'll get more money if they think a Westerner is running their brothel.
Really?
So, well, us Westerners, we have higher standards.
So, yeah, you're contributing to the whole bad image
of
Westerners now,
right?
Yeah, I
think I suddenly am, like, yeah.
You're the biggest madam in Indonesia now.
Yes. But also I found that they were much more likely to tell me about their sex lives and about their intimate details if I told them about mine.
Yeah, did they find the fact that you were a lesbian at all off-putting?
Not at all. Every time I sort of came out in Indonesia, it was interesting. Before I went, like, everyone said, don't come out in Indonesia. Like, you know,
right,
they're Muslim.
Thing.
They're,
yeah.
like, you know, they'll freak out. They'll stone you to death. Like, all these issues. And, you know, I have a problem being closeted. Like, I just can't help but sort of, this is who I am. Love me anyway. And so I went there, and I would come out to everyone, and I never had a bad reaction. I mean, like, I'd have reactions, of course, like, you know, you just need a real man.
A good screw-in.
Exactly. But the women I talked to were very sort of interested in it. How do lesbians have sex? You know, what do you do without a man? Like, all these sorts of questions. And so I would just talk about, you know, what lesbians do and all of these things. And they also had no problem, like, they do have this picture of Americana as, like, sort of this big area where you have sex. Like, they really think Americans can walk into any room and have sex right there and then, which, you know, is true for some of us, but
right. I mean, I've
so me being a lesbian just sort of fit into Americans' sexual deviance.
Wow.
So they had no problem. Like, it wasn't like I was their daughter and a lesbian, but I was just some Westerner and a lesbian, so that was okay. But never a bad reaction at all. And a lot of people came out and said, there's this whole, like, there's a lot of literature written on Indonesia and, like PDA, public displays of affection, like, same sex in Indonesia is completely normal. Like, that's what they expect. Like, arm in arm, hand in hand, girl and girl, guy and guy, everywhere you go. Matter of fact, it was really nice when my girlfriend and I went there, you know, we could sort of do that. No one would, like, question anything. But there's also, like, this large literature about how Indonesian, like, bisexuality in Indonesia is rampant. And that, like, everyone sort of gets married and has kids because that's what they're supposed to do, but they also do other things behind closed doors. And so a lot of times I had people coming out to me in Indonesia, like, when I would talk about lesbians.
Did you find that to be true then?
I found it a lot of times. Like, I'm not going to say, like, a huge majority, but a number of times, more than I would have expected, people would come up to me and say, you know, either, like, men would tell me they're having homosexual sex to avoid getting AIDS, or women would tell me, you know, like, I really want to do that, I really want to try that, or I have tried that, or women are just good cuddlers, like, sort of that sort of thing. But.
So they'd be skipping right to the lesbian bed death, right?
Yeah, yeah. Over the U-Haul and everything.
Just cuddling in Xena episodes.
Mm-hmm. That's really all there is.
See, lesbian bed death?
Yes.
Do I know what that means?
You should. As a good lesbian, you should know. it's the idea that lesbians have a lot of really amazing sex for the first year and then none anymore, which I have to say I have not found to be true.
Well, you've got Erica listening. You can't say anything that might upset her.
Erica's plate is full, and I'm not on it, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought
Erica has heaping spoonfuls of love, yeah.
But my girlfriend will be listening.
And Piper can't just be a side dish to anyone, you know.
Yeah. I need to be the main course.
She's all that and a side of chips. Bag of chips.
Yeah. Which,
since I'm the dumb co-host, I have to ask you some very basic questions. When you said that your expertise was cultural constructions. What does this word mean? Constructions of AIDS. I mean, what are you talking about? Make it simple for. I mean,
us slow-moving Midwesterners.
Exactly.
It's sort of like the our interpretations of AIDS, the disease, and the things that go around it, and who gets it and who doesn't get it, sort of our biases and what we've been educated on. And one of the things, like my dissertation, will be on a lot of the funding for AIDS education is Western-based. It's either USAID or UNAID, or you know, all these different organizations are coming in there and saying, "Ooh, we want to educate you." And what they're doing is they're saying, okay, the biases you have, like about it being a rich disease, a white disease, you know, a heterosexual disease, these biases aren't true. But instead of saying, like, educating as to what is true, they're really bringing in their biases and saying, here, have ours. Our biases are better. And so that's what I'm going to look at, is sort of the cultural constructions, their interpretations of AIDS, and whether that changes after they've been educated through these programs or not.
Well, one in that case kind of would have to ask, like, to quote the famous Roman, quid est veritas, like, what is truth? Like, what is, like, maybe, you know, are their prejudices true because actually statistically that is the case? I mean, could one say that by giving them any other prejudices, any other biases, or in fact we're making it more false?
Right. I think definitely we're sort of giving them Western epidemiology biases as opposed to what their experience is. Because a lot, you know, in Southeast Asia, they are experiencing it as a heterosexual disease. And the strain of AIDS they have is actually more easily transmitted heterosexually than the strain we have in America.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There's, like, you know, different letters that you put on the end of it.
Right.
HIVE is what they have there.
I didn't realize they were differently...
Different strains. And you can get more than
infectious.
One at a time. Yeah. Different of them are.
Wow. That's a whole extra layer to my nightmares now. Thank you.
No problem.
Remind me after the show to tell you all about what I learned this week about bovine spongiform encephalitis.
That sounds exciting.
Hope you haven't eaten any red meat in the last 20 years. But I digress.
As the producer, I never chime in, but I have a question. Do you think some of these biases are formed because of the – you mentioned earlier in the show that there are only 1,000 reported cases, but the estimated number is likely much higher. Are there biases in who's getting the testing? As a result, people are viewing it as being an upper-class disease simply because the upper-class folks are the only ones who can afford the tests.
I'm sure that has somewhat to do with it. But a lot of times, like, what they're testing is the military, or they're testing people who fly in and out of the country. So that would be the upper class. But I think they're going to find it. And they're also testing in cities. Big cities is what they're testing right now, as opposed to sort of the general population. So I think that'll change as time goes on. And it's interesting, too, like the sort of, like, where do you start? Like, when I was there, you know, they have these circumcision ceremonies in which, you know, they circumcise, you know, 50 teenage boys with the same knife.
Youch.
So, like, where do you start at the level of education, you know? Or they still, you know, inoculate whole villages with the same needle. Like, they just don't have the money or the materials they need to sort of do things differently. And so there's a whole lot of layers in on top of that.
So I'm curious. So you to go back to something you mentioned very early in the show, you're talking about kind of this, you know, the setup of the prostitution over there. They had houses, they're paying off the cops, they're paying off the house madam, whatever. So it sounds like these prostitutes are bringing in significant folding green if they can afford to, like, pay off all these people. Like, it's not a bad paying. Like, certainly here in the U.S., right, usually prostitution, other than maybe the top 10th of 1% of, like, call girls, like, prostitution is like a poverty line or below profession. Is that not the case?
With the economic crash, like, everyone is making no money there.
Right.
But prostitutes are doing fairly well. I mean, there's still a lot of their income like the women I saw, they were like the best dressed Indonesians. Like they had the newest clothes and they had like jewelry, and a lot of times their clients would bring them this stuff.
Right, yeah.
But a lot of times they're also like just making that much money. They have enough money to sort of live, to send their kids to some of the best schools, and to send money back to the countryside. And they are making a really good living. And, you know, the average Indonesian pay is like $10 to $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And the most of the sex workers I talked to were making at least $30 a month, if not more. So they were definitely on the sort of upper class scale. But they also got very attached to the money and attached to, like, they could buy their nice clothes and their nice jewelry, but then they did have to pay off their madams and their guards and things like that. And so a lot of times the way they're brought into the system, they're brought in debt. Like, if you want to live here, you will owe me this amount of money. And if, you know, if I bring you here transporting you from your village, you owe me this amount of money. So they still have to pay off that debt, and that's how they get into it. And so even though they're living very well and still sending money back, they're not paying off their debt, so they can't get out of it.
The whole company store thing, right?
Exactly.
So you're talking about them dressing well and so forth. And this is something I actually asked you before the show, so I'm repeating myself. But, like, so what is – What does the well-dressed Muslim prostitute wear? Like, what turns Muslim men on? Do they just dress like a slutty Westerners, or is there, like, particularly, like, sexy chadors?
Well, it is interesting because we would not sort of, like, if we saw a Indonesian prostitute, we would never think, that's an Indonesian prostitute.
Sex worker.
They dress very conservative compared to what we would consider sex worker garments. Matter of fact, they often would comment on how I did not have good manners because I dressed more scantily clad than they did, because I would, like, my shoulders would be bare, or I would be wearing shorts
hussy.
Or something. Yeah. All the time they were trying to cover me up. My hair would be showing or something.
That's pretty amusing.
Well, I was going to say, you're showing a little skin tonight. I wasn't going to say anything, but...
That's just for you.
And I didn't even think to wear my peekaboo pants.
You have peekaboo pants?
Well, there's
unfortunately, yes. His favorite pair of khakis.
It goes with a homeless garb?
It would have, yeah.
You know, I heard
you shut him down. Wow!
Before I came on the show, I was told that you were the witty one that filled in all of the silences.
I'm sick.
Today.
Sick.
Yeah.
Having never heard the show,
I am the witty
one. I'm basing everything I know about the show on my show.
I'm the quiet one.
And although I really like the show,
what show?
This show.
Oh.
Because I've never heard the show otherwise.
Yeah.
Nobody does.
You have to start listening. No, I am.
Yeah, well, I'm not usually awake at this time.
Yeah, we're actually keeping up way past our bedtime.
You and Erica are like munching the carpet back in here.
I was just going to say, going at it hammer and tongs.
Erica's late. But I typically get up like at 4 or 5 in the morning.
I've been trying to get this Erica on the show for a long time.
She sounds hot, too, especially with that androgynous kind of feminized name, Erica.
She's a nutball. She'd be good on the show.
A nutball?
Mm. All right. Fruit Loop.
You guys understand, I came straight from the emergency room here. I'm sick, not well, I'm malfunctioning. Sorry. Present questions.
She's looking at the clock. That's a bad sign.
That's what happened on my prom date, too. So maybe I was delusional. Maybe I wasn't paying attention when you talked about this, but you did a lot of studying, it sounded like. But how successful do you think was your education, the educational part of your program, like getting people to change their practices or to protect themselves or to learn more about the disease?
The thing with sort of, you know, education like that, they find that it's not very beneficial to go in and educate someone and say, this is what you need to know, and then leave. Like, that's not going to change any behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
But you also can't go in and say, you need to change this behavior, and leave. Like, that doesn't work either. And that's why we were doing empowerment seminars. We were trying to empower the women to sort of decide that they are worth changing their behaviors. And so that was more where we were focused. And I think the empowerment seminars we did were very effective. Like, the women definitely had more self-confidence when we were done and sort of understood it in a community setting, as opposed to, like, they were thinking that they were, like, individually they were, you know, responsible for this, and they individually could not change things. And so we brought them together as a community, and we showed them how they could sort of change things within their community.
So when you're talking about empowerment, I didn't get the impression from what you were saying that these prostitutes had sort of low self-esteem or whatever. I mean, they seem to be kind of doing better than their peers.
Well, they have money.
Financially, right.
But that's not always self-esteem.
Don't I know it. But do they indeed have low self-esteem?
They do a lot, and especially, I mean, like the whole idea that on some level, although it's not as stigmatized, they still are, you know, very religious often, and they have some sort of conflicts with what they're doing, but more so with the conflicts of, you know, playing poker and drinking and things like that that they're doing when they don't have clients. And so sort of like empowering them around that. And a lot of them were like, what can I do individually? Like, you know, if I tell my client to use a condom, he's not going to. He's just going to go next door. Mm-hmm. You know, with 300 of them in an area, there's a lot of competition. But when you get them all together and you say, well, if you all say you have to use a condom.
Aha, a monopoly.
Exactly. Suddenly, like.
Ayn Rand would be very upset at your anti-competitive practices. It's in defiance of reason.
Isn't there some kind of, I mean, not that I know anything about women, but isn't there some kind of female condom that you can wear secretly and the men don't even know that you've got this thing embedded in
you? It's not secret.
It's not.
It's not secret. They can see it. It's on the outside, but it goes in the inside. It's
actually kind of looks like organs are hanging out of your body. It's a pretty unpleasant.
Well, I mean, there are ones that go inside and stuff, but the problem is, A, they're not really readily available in Indonesia, and B, they're about 5 times as expensive as male condoms, even in America. So they don't really talk about them there, or they don't have them there. So it doesn't work as well. And they're not as good for preventing things as male condoms. Actually. But they're working on it.
This is a little bit tangential. I was just wondering, just because I was reading this article today about, you know, there's this South African patent thing where they're trying to buy cheap generic versions of
right.
drugs for at least South Africa.
Right,
not.
South Africa.
When you mention all these sort of undiagnosed, or presumably they're going to go from undiagnosed to epidemic.
Well, there's all sorts of problems with, as you'd say, cultural constructions of AIDS in South Africa, right? Like the health minister himself says that HIV doesn't cause AIDS.
Right.
And until very recently, the president was of the same opinion, and
he still is, pretty much. He was just forced into saying he
wasn't. There's a lot of issues besides the patent stuff, although that was a very interesting side note. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just wondering, do you see the same kind of drug time bomb happening in Indonesia? Because said they're also mostly poor people, and they also presumably can't afford.
Yeah, I definitely think that if your HIV drugs get popular in Indonesia, they will be, because they're sort of government funded and government mandated and government made. But I see that stuff a long way away.
For example, in South Africa, the average healthcare expenditure, again, it's a state controlled healthcare system, is a 4 rand, which is about $2 per person per year. And when AIDS drugs cost, even generic versions, when you're talking about $10,000 a year for each patient, right, it's just completely out of the realm of possibility
right.
to treat AIDS cases, especially in South Africa where AIDS is hugely prevalent. I don't think it's quite as bad as like Nigeria. I think that's the worst, where I've heard estimates that like 90% of the population could be infected. In like some.
I think of certain segments of the population.
Right, certain segments, yeah.
Yeah.
Something horrifying like that. But there's a... I read a couple of big articles about this drug problem, like that South Africa might say, okay, we're not observing patents anymore on drugs. We're going to be making generic versions. And the drug companies, of course, seeing a horrific precedent there as being, say, oh, we'll give you them at cost. We won't charge you any patents. But it still doesn't alleviate the fact that it costs $10,000 a year anyway.
But there's also, I mean, like in Brazil and stuff, they're starting to make them, like the government's making the drugs on their own. Like they decided not to go through the pharmaceuticals. Even the generic versions were too much for them, so they decided to start making the drugs on their own and making them more available. So that could be an option as well.
Yeah, because it sounds like the same might be the same kind of problem in Indonesia. Yeah, with you know, poor country but a huge population. You know, kind of ignorance of even willful ignorance of AIDS up until recently,
right?
Allowing this huge
like in India and
spread.
China.
Yeah, in India and China, exactly.
So you're here now. Are you going to go back? Do you have a follow-up study planned?
Yes. I was only doing preliminary research before and doing a language intensive.
So how good is your Indonesian?
Well, I could speak to you, but you wouldn't know if it was good or not.
That's true. Which of the 167 languages do you speak?
There are actually 707 different languages.
That's not what you told me earlier. I wrote it down.
You wrote it wrong.
No, 330 different
ethnic groups. 707 different languages.
Oh, that's a 7. And that's a 0, not a 6.
When they became a country.
Sorry.
You know.
I don't believe there are 707 different languages. I don't believe.
Okay, that's fine.
That is a rather huge number.
It does depend on what you define as a language.
Well, right. I mean, do people in Texas?
According to anthropologists and linguists who've gone in and studied, this is what they've come up with. I don't make these numbers up. I don't care how many languages there are. I know one language. I know Bahasa Indonesia, which is the Indonesian language, which when they became a country like 50 years ago, they glossed over. They took a trade language from Malaysia, and they made it into Indonesian. So it's completely phonetic. It follows every rule. You know, there's no conjugation. There's no, like...
Oh, it's an artificial language?
Yeah, completely. And so it's... But everyone has to learn, like, under a military regime, they mandated everyone learn it. Mm-hmm. So everyone speaks it, and that's what I learned. And so Saya Bisa Berbahasa Indonesia is I can speak Indonesian.
Great. I'll have to remember that one. Grab it off the CD later.
Exactly. But I did learn a whole lot of new words when I was there. Like, you know, a whole lot of words for sex workers and condoms and...
Rimming and...
Lesbian. Lesbi is the Indonesian term.
Really? So in our...
But I am going back, which was his original question. I'm getting grants. Like, through our PhD program, you get 3 years of funded for coursework, and then you have to find your own money to go do your field work. So I've applied for 12 grants, and depending on which one of those comes through, I'll be leaving in the fall to go to Indonesia and live there for a year.
That's awesome. So you and Erica are going to get a little hut.
Did you say you and Erica?
Sense? I tried to. Like, I think
you're.
He keeps trying to make me and Erica a couple, but me and my girlfriend Jamie will.
Jamie.
Sorry,
I'm thinking of Jamie Summers, like the Bionic Woman. She was kind of.
That's who she was named after.
Really?
My girlfriend's Vietnamese. Oh. And when she came over, she had a Vietnamese name, and her parents like sat them all down and sort of named them. All English names, all one time.
After characters.
And
the
she was named
Norman,
Jamie
Bionic
after
Woman.
Bionic Woman.
Really?
Wow.
It's like a whole
That's
twisted,
cool.
your own twisted version of the Ellis Island thing. Wow.
Is she going to be coming with you?
Well, that gets complicated. Right now she's in medical school, and she does international medicine, so she's in Israel for the last 3 years.
Wow.
When she'd be doing rotations and stuff, so it's possible
she
could do...
You have a girlfriend who's, like, out of the country the past 3 years? No wonder you're, like, hornier than a...
bag of Tomcats.
I'd like to say flirtatious.
Randy?
I was going to say, if I were wearing my peekaboo pants, I don't even know what... We'd probably have to cancel the show. I mean, it would be a big...
Spread out the plastic and get out the baby oil again, huh?
Big.
Well, you know, you are cute, but I think the grapefruit turned me on more.
It was a very
Ooh,
luscious grapefruit. I buy the $1.50 grapefruits at Jenny Wicks. They're especially luscious. And anyway.
Sensual. Oh, wait. Is it sensual or sensuous? I can never...
Look,
I think
you can go explore. You can go research that grammar question, and Piper and I will
shut down. See, this is why I spent a lot of nights alone in high school and college, and now, to be frank.
Okay, girls don't want to talk about grammar. What do they want?
Wait, I thought they wanted cunning linguists. That's what they always told me.
You twisted an old joke. Piper, we've burned up all of our time with you. Probably haven't even gotten scratched the surface.
We didn't even talk about you teaching prostitutes to put condoms on with their mouths.
No, we didn't get there. Sorry about that.
Sounds like we need a Piper part two.
We do.
Revenge of the Swamp People.
I have to tell you, there will never be enough Piper.
No, I agree. I am. Yes, unless government labs start cranking out Pipers and vats.
Unless cloning becomes... You know, when I did bump into you, I did take a cell sample, so I'm going to send that off to my secret laboratory in Korea and have my own army of Pipers cloned. And
you better be careful. It's an awful lot of sex energy you're giving off to the world.
It's all part of his master plan.
Anyway, we're out of time. The time has just flown by. Piper, thank you for coming on the show. This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Please come in again. It was fantastic having you. Thank you, our one listener, Brenda from Wexford.
And Erica.
For listening. And Erica. Tune in next week, same time. Stay tuned for Andrew's Musictacular. And good night.
Song explosion.